Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with the K, the number for kids.
Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Look what happened with Kerry Wood. He had actually more ability than Michael Kopech, because Kerry Wood had both a curve and a slider that were unhittable. In his fifth major league start, he struck out 20 guys. There wasn't anybody alive who could have hit him that day. It was as masterful a performance as I ever saw, with all of his pitches. And yet, the most games he ever won, the most games was 13. I don't want to see that happen to Michael Kopech. I think, unfortunately, Kerry's body and his mechanics did not allow him to get near his potential out of what he had, which was astonishingly good. But you saw what happened. His body just dissolved a couple of surgeries later, and there he was, still a pretty good pitcher, but not near what was projected for him. And Michael Kopech is in a situation where he needs arm strength. He needs elasticity to remain there. He needs all of the things you can't possibly get in a situation where you've had two starts. The guy's had two starts this year. Been out of the bullpen a couple of times, and everybody wants to just put him on full burn and let him go right now. Well, you do that, he's going to wind up on the surgeon's table again, and you're going to find what happened to him happens to a lot of hard-throwing guys with a high ceiling. They turn into what happened to Kerry Wood. I don't want to see that happen to Michael Kopech.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. There you have Steve Stone. He was on with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi yesterday, and it was great. He had some great things to say, and we'll get into it. But that is the comparison that really frosted me as I was watching Kopech the other day. Len Casper was doing the game, and he, you know, pointed out that they wear the same number, and it was hard not to think of the other guy as you watch this guy go. And he asked Stoney about it, and Stoney kind of jumped in a little but didn't seem to really take the bait. But obviously he was thinking about it, and that was in his head. You know, to me, they're different pitchers. To me, they're completely different style of pitcher, right? What I've seen from Michael Kopech this year that I like is – that he is pitching in the strike zone. He's not throwing 110 miles an hour. You know, do you remember we talked to Coop years ago, and he would talk about, we got a guy that wants to throw the ball through a wall. You know, it was like Kopech wanted to take a running start and just see if he could get to like 110 or something. And instead, he's become more of a pitcher. And in fact, his velocity is not really, I mean, it's the late action on his pitch that is so devastating. I don't think it's just the velocity, and he's not hitting 100 miles an hour. And in that start, by the fifth inning, I think he threw a 91-mile-an-hour fastball. That kind of scares me. I understand the comparison. Even Tony La Russa talked about Adam Wainwright in the postgame because, you know, it's what you've seen. For me,
right,
it's Chris Sale, right? Because I've seen that, and he's a hard-throwing guy. But Burley started out in the bullpen, and then became a starter. And I mean, they're totally different style pitching, pitchers, but I worry that we're trying to fit this guy into some kind of a, whether it's a cautionary tale or whether it is a sort of operative usage type thing. I would like them to take their time and unleash him when it matters most.
But I think one's related to the other. And I understand why it would trigger a reaction because, look, with due respect to his career, and he ended up having a pretty solid career, it wasn't as spectacular as people projected. But I don't think that any young right-hander wants to be compared to Kerry Wood in Chicago because of, to me, when you look at Kerry Wood, as popular as he was, he somewhat is the symbol of unfulfilled potential. He is. There's no doubt about it. And we know why. We saw the fifth. We remember May 5th when he struck out 20 batters, Stoney referenced. Mully, when you have, I mean, it's inevitable, though, isn't it? You have a big right-hander who throws hard. That is a physically imposing specimen on the mound. And he undergoes surgery early in his career that began amid so much promise in Chicago. And we are provincial here. And we do make comparisons based on things that we remember that weren't that long ago. And it doesn't seem, it's a long time now, but it doesn't seem that long ago that Kerry Wood was the guy that you had similar type of hopes for that you do for Michael Kopech. And here's why it doesn't bother me to the extent that I think that it did initially. Because I didn't like it either when I heard it. But I think that if they use it as a cautionary tale, and if they use that example, like, okay, we're not going down this road because we don't want to, we have to be cautious. We don't want to be, you know, overusing Michael Kopech, then that's okay, because if that example helps makes you more intelligent in how you use Michael Kopech, then I think it's a good example to invoke right now.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Kerry Wood, it's, you're right. You know, he won a lot of hearts and minds with that performance, but you think back to that Cubs team. That was, did they lose to Florida? And you had Kerry Wood, and you had what's his name? Who's the other?
Pryor.
Mark Pryor. Calfzilla.
Wooden Pryor.
Calfzilla. And that was like one of the most unrealized. I really did think that that combination, and then everyone blamed Dusty for it. I mean, come on, give me a break. I remember watching that game where Mark Pryor took that fall, and it was like an NFL. It was like an NFL hit. It was like he went up in the air and came down on his shoulder, and then he stayed in the game. And I was like, "That, hey, that is a really, they got to stop that and look at that. That's like a serious problem." And he really never was the same player again. And Kerry Wood, obviously, same type of thing, around for years without being able to play, and then he comes back and has like a kind of an Indian summer to his career, but never the middle part, right?
You know that you just made Dustin, like, we just lost him for the rest of the show, because as mad as you got hearing Kerry Wood compared to Kopech, the fact that we had to mention Mark Pryor this show and the Marcus Giles incident in the collision, we lost him. He's gone.
No, I mean, I'm just saying that, like, that was when we look at, like, and I mean, I really don't even want to make this comparison, but when we look at a couple of hard throwing guys like Crochet and Kopech, how do you not think about where the Cubs were at with that team? And they had arrived a year early, kind of, and they were there. You thought for sure they were going to be in a World Series that season, and somehow they ended up losing. But it was extraordinary to see that young pitching staff, and then poof, it was gone. And you thought that was going to be something that lasted a long time. And you know, again, one freak injury and one guy that threw the ball in a way that you just couldn't sustain it. You couldn't, nobody can throw that kind of curveball that and as often as that. And he just kind of ruined himself. And Stoney's right. His body disintegrated.
I think then when you're talking about what this means in the context of this season for Kopech, I think we both kind of agree that, you know, despite what you saw the other day, if they want to put him in the rotation, I think we think he would succeed. That goes without saying. But you can't be tempted to do that too soon. And I think that you better, you know, tap the brakes a little bit, because as crazy as this sounds, and I don't know if I'm thinking out loud here, what is best for Michael Kopech almost outweighs what is best for the White Sox bullpen as we sit here this morning on April 27th. I mean, and I know that may sound absurd, but to put one player ahead of the team, and I'm not necessarily doing that, but I do think that you have to consider, even though or the Sox rotation or whatever element of the Sox pitching staff you want to say, his individual preservation matters more than how he can help your bullpen or your rotation at this point in time.
And let's take a listen to Stoney. He also talked about he talked about exactly what you're talking about right now. Let's take a listen.
I have to keep trying to temper a lot of the folks on Twitter, especially, and a lot of White Sox fans. They want him in the rotation right now.
I'm right here. You can speak direct.
Also, me.
You can speak directly to me.
Okay, I will speak directly to you. Then let me explain something to you. He hasn't pitched in 2 years coming into this season. And you have a guy who is otherworldly as far as his upside is concerned. The one thing that you have to remember is managers, most managers, and I don't think Tony La Russa falls into this category, but most managers have a very short sight down the road. Most front offices have a longer sight down the road. So I think a lot of fans, and perhaps you, Dan, and a lot of managers, not Tony La Russa in this case, they want to see what's best for the team today. So that view is what's best for the team today is starting Michael Kopech. Then you look at a longer view and you find out what's best for the player. What's best for the career of Michael Kopech? What's best is to try to avoid major injury and perhaps another surgery by getting him stretched out and getting his arm strong again. Because, look, his arm is really good right now, but we saw the velocity in the performance at 5 innings and 87 pitches. We saw the velocity go down fairly precipitously. I don't want to get this kid hurt because I think the sky's the limit as far as his future. I know what's best for the White Sox is the same guy who pitched yesterday going out there for another 25, 26 starts. But the problem is you're not going to see that guy. That guy who pitched yesterday is a fully rested guy going out and giving you 5 innings. You got to get his arm strength back to where he can support that, because people don't realize 32 starts in a major league season, the most innings he's ever had, and that was one time, was 140 innings. So if you just pitch him in rotation, he's going to get to that. You're not going to be in August yet, and you're going to have to shut him down for the rest of the year. What good does that do?
There it is.
He's right.
There it is.
He's right. Yeah.
And I mean, I understand the impulse. I know how much I want to see him pitch, and I, you know, it's fantastic to watch. But in that fifth inning, he was supposed to go four. He went four, and he was ready to go. He threw a 91-mile-an-hour fastball.
Right. Yeah, and that's a point worth remembering, and that's well put by Steve Stone. And it is taking the long view, and it's hard because I think that's why it's good to have the 24-hour rule. Sort of, oh boy, you can celebrate, you can anticipate, you can get excited about what you just saw, but when you take a deep breath and step away and you look at this season for Michael Kopech, you want him winning the kind of game he won on Sunday in September and October, and he's very capable of doing that in these high leverage situations. So to make that possible, you've got to slow down right now in terms of usage, in terms of your excitement. You just have to kind of show more patience than anything right now.
And we've got to get to the pick six, so everyone be patient. We will get back to this eventually. Mullion Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. It's Pick Six with Mullion Haw.
where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Nico Horner led off for the Cubs, and Ian Happ hit fifth. Do you like Nico leading off, and what happens when Jock Peterson comes off the injured list later this week?
Well, Nico's locked in, okay? So Nico's not going anywhere. God bless Jock. Welcome back. But Nico stays, period, end of story, and I don't want to hear anything else about it. I'm making the call. I like him leading off. I thought he did a good job. I think that Ian Happ, maybe it helps him a little bit to take that pressure off him. I don't know how he feels about it, but Ian Happ is the kind of guy that is going to give you a good effort and isn't going to be a powder or anything like that. So I think it's a good idea. I think they got to get things cranked up. And, you know, Nico did fine yesterday. He was not the problem. So I'm all for keeping him there a little bit, seeing how that goes. And I'm not dropping him out of the lineup, and I'm not moving him back to the minor leagues. I don't care about I would never have really cared about that whole idea of saving the year and all that. He's a good player. They need him on the team.
Yeah, Nico had a good night. Two hits, two more hits. He's been valuable since he's come up and made an impact. It seems like every game that he has started, and he's played four different positions, I don't think that there's any doubt that he should stay, and he belongs, and he's proven that. And I like him in the leadoff spot because he's doing something that Ian Happ has failed to do so far this year in that position, and that is, you know, get on base. You know, Ian Happ will walk. He's got a lot of walks. He also has 27 strikeouts and 69 at-bats. He's hitting 145. He's got one extra base hit. I don't know what's wrong with him. I'm not sure that he should be granted anything when Jock Peterson comes back. I think he could be more affected by Jock's return than Nico Horner. Nico Horner could play second base. He can play some left field. He can back up Javi at shortstop if Javi's hammy, say that a few times in a row, isn't any better. So I think that I want to see more from Ian Happ. He's off to a very slow start. Don't know what's wrong, but Nico Horner right now gets the benefit of the doubt that I don't think Ian Happ deserves any longer, at least for the time being.
A pick six to end the half!
How much of Chris Bryant's strong start is motivated by doubters, and how much is created by good health? And does it matter? If this continues as May approaches, is it pushing the Cubs toward making a deal or selling high?
Well, I hope it's a combination of both. I hope that Chris Bryant is enjoying this little mini surge to start this season, because he deserves that. He deserves to look as happy as he looked rounding second last night after his grand slam. He deserves to be free to succeed without any this pressure and scrutiny, but you know, he'll continue to get it. He'll continue to feel it. He looks healthy though, Malia. He looks like a guy that isn't bothered by whatever was bothering him last year. He's swinging. He's got more power. He definitely is as selective as ever, but this is the guy that the Cubs fans have been waiting to see again, the return of Chris Bryant, if you will. And if he had a different agent, I would think that it would be realistic and even encouraged to say, all right, get back together. Let's strike a deal, because you could envision him being part of your long-term future. I don't think he wants to go anywhere. But his agent is Scott Boras, so every conversation you have about Chris Bryant's future comes with an asterisk. So I hope they don't start to shop him, but I fear that is the way some of these conversations may go.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, since the Yu Darvish trade, I have felt like the Cubs are interested in getting to a rebuild. Whether that is accurate or not, that's just been kind of in the back of my head. And I haven't heard a lot of negotiating going on. I think Chris Bryant, I really would like to see him stick around. I would like to have him reach that Cub for Life stage. I know that we've talked about that $200 million contract that he turned down. Is that thing still on the board? Let's see if he wants it, even if Scott Boras doesn't. I think Chris Bryant, it would be great if he were to stick around. It would be great if they made one more shot at trying to keep him. And I would love to see that happen. And I think he wants to be in Chicago. I think he loves being in Chicago. And I think he is a good enough player and can help you in a lot of different ways, right? If you move him out to left field, that helps you too. I hope that they come to some kind of resolution. I hate the idea of selling high, and yet I feel that's what they want to do.
A pick six of 100 yards!
The Sox begin a three-game series with the Tigers tonight, with Detroit the worst team in baseball at 7-16. Is there any excuse not to sweep before starting yet another series with the Indians?
Boy, I love the idea that we're just giving the White Sox a sweep here. And I called for the sweep against Texas. But
I know you did. I want the same thing. I want a repeat.
I think the problem is, I hope they get the sweep, but Casey Mize is pitching the second game against Carlos Rodon, and I get it. It's not like he's tearing it up, but, you know, the problem with calling for sweeps is pitching. That's always been the problem when you think about gambling that way. You just can't control how good a guy is on a given day. And my fear would be if I call for the sweep, that it's going to bite me because they're going to have like an outstanding performance by a pitcher and I'm going to regret what I did. I felt that the Texas pitching staff wasn't going to shut down the White Sox. I worry about Casey Mize in that middle game. I mean, listen, it doesn't really matter how well he pitches because you know that Carlos Rodon is no hitting them. So this is his second no hitter of the year. Maybe he has to carry it into the 11th. I don't know. I'm being an idiot. Two of three is fine by me. If you want a sweep, then that I will keep.
You are very, very respectful of a Casey Mize and his 1-2 record with a 5.23 ERA. And I know it's based more on the past than it is the present. But, boy, you have given him a ton of respect. And I think that's wise because Mize can really deal when he's on. But I think that the game that concerns me is the Dylan Cease start, that the third game of the series. I think the Sox can win the first two. I've got a lot of faith in Giolito bouncing back tonight after he had to move his start back because he couldn't open a bottle. I have a lot of faith in time for Carlos Rodon tomorrow. I think he's going to shut down the Tigers and continue this sort of strong start to the season. I don't know what to expect from Dylan Cease. I don't know anybody that can. So I think they could take two out of three. I was trying to coax a Mully prediction for a sweep. We did not get that, but two of three is not too bad.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
The NFL draft begins Thursday and goes through the weekend. What is your gut feeling right now? Will the Bears come away with their starting quarterback, a developmental quarterback, or any kind of quarterback this weekend?
My gut feeling is I can't wait. I cannot wait. I love the draft. I love the countdown to the draft. I love the hype surrounding the draft, and I love to hear people criticize the importance of the draft because you know what? The more you talk about it, the more it reinforces the draft matters. I love the draft. Okay, the Bears will get a quarterback. I wouldn't be shocked if it's the second round. I don't know if Ryan Trade-Up Pace is going to trade up and squander those assets, but I hope that he resists that urge or temptation or instinct to do that. I think if he stands pat, we'll talk about this more later, at 20, you can get a player that can start week one. You can get your quarterback in the second round. And by all means, if you want to trade back to get another player, maybe a third player in your top 100 picks, maybe three players in the first two rounds even, that would be even better. So I think the quarterback comes in the second round. I think they get a player to start on week one in the first round. And that, to me, would be a pretty good first 2 days of the draft.
Pirate Pace, the one-eye drafter. I like it, David. You've nicknamed him now. He's the pirate. Yeah, because everybody, as soon as he's done, everyone says, arr. He's Pirate Pace, the one-eye drafter. He just zeroes in on one guy. Look, maybe it's because we've been looking at offensive linemen and we're going to do it today. Maybe I'm becoming obsessed with improving that particular position. I want them to sit chilly and to wait for a pretty good offensive lineman to drop to him and to take that guy, to get the offensive tackle in the first round of the draft, and then you can come back and go ahead and get your corner, get your quarterback, whoever it might be. But I would love to see the draft come to him instead of the other way around. And I think, honestly, I think the top five quarterbacks in this draft will be gone by about 12. I think it could be 15, because I think maybe New England moves up for one, and I'm just throwing them in. But I think all those guys are gone. They go 1, 2, 3, and then within the top 12 picks of the draft, they're all gone. And, unless Mac Jones is falling and he winds up and New England doesn't have to trade up for him. I think New England could trade up in this draft to get their quarterback. And I think it's something that I'm going to be very aware of. I don't want the Bears trading up ahead of any of these teams. You got to get ahead of Denver, right? If you really want to make sure you get one of these five quarterbacks. I would rather them take someone in the second round, and I would rather them not use up all their assets. I think they got to think about an offensive lineman. I don't believe what Dustin said, that an offensive lineman is a pick for the future. I think an offensive lineman can help you right now. He can step in. Did anybody watch the Buccaneers? They had a really good one last year.
Tristan Wirfs.
Thank you. And then off you go. You've got a future there. You got a good player and a cheaper deal. And I think there are guys that are worthy of taking. So that's my hope for the Bears. No more Pirate Pace, the one I drafted.
Pick six.
Do you agree with Thaddeus Young that, quote, it definitely would be a big smack in the face if we make all these changes and adjustments to our team and we can't follow through or push through into the playoffs, unquote? Are the Bulls blowing it, or is Washington running away with the playoff spot?
I think it's fun to think about it in both ways, right? Because I think there is an element of the Bulls blowing it. They just haven't been very good since the trade. And now they're kind of playing some Eastern Conference teams, and they're better against the Eastern Conference. But I think that it's been upsetting to not see them be able to get it. I like what Thaddeus Young said. I think it is a smack in the face, and I think they made these adjustments in order to get the playoffs, and it's not working right now. So I think they need that desperation. I think they need that defense, and I think they need to hold up if Zach comes back, if he doesn't, and get that number 10 spot. Washington has played really well. They had an 8-game winning streak. Now they've lost a game. We need them to lose some more games. But if it ends, no matter how it turns out, the Bulls were in a position, they held that spot, and they had a losing record. So they need to start winning because they've done enough losing.
Thaddeus Young tells the truth. He acknowledges the elephant in the locker room, and that is they made the big trade. We celebrated the big trade. We endorsed and embraced the big trade, and it was the right thing to do. But we thought that they would be better after the big trade, and they have not been from a record standpoint. And they started out from a stylistic standpoint being very impressive, but they have regressed for whatever reason, and there are several of them. And obviously now they're playing without Zach LaVine, so you take that into consideration. But thank you, Thaddeus Young, for once again telling the truth about the realities of this team now, because if they don't make the playoffs, it will be a disappointment, because we raised expectations after the trade. They embraced those heightened expectations. And if they don't get into the playoffs, I don't know if it's because of the Wizards or the Raptors, but there will be a sense of in Chicago that the Bulls blew it.
Can you believe this? Pick six!
After hearing Andrew Shaw explain his NHL retirement before his 30th birthday, what's his proper place in Blackhawks history? A player in the top tier who the Hawks couldn't have won the last two Cups without, or just a memorable role player? If you're ranking valuable members of the Hawks' decade of dominance from 2009 to 2019, does Shaw crack your top 10?
Loved his farewell. Very classy, very classic, Andrew Shaw. Thank you, Chicago, for giving a Mutt a home. That was great. Look, there are seven Blackhawks who won three cups, and those guys will, you know, maybe all of them will have their sweaters hanging from the rafters one day. Then there's Corey Crawford. Then there's probably, you know, okay, Brian Bickle. His name is on three cups, I believe, even though he didn't play in the first one. Then you get into the Andrew Shaw territory, and then you're getting into the bottom half of, you know, your top 10, that fringe. I think you could make the argument that Andrew Shaw is one of those special, unique players whose role was important. And I don't know They were really good in 13 and 15, so maybe they would have won without Shaughzy, but I do think that his impact put them over the top, and he was an integral part of both of those teams that he deserves his due, and he could make the, you could make the argument if you wanted to that he was among the top 10 players of that decade when you look at significance. Along, you know, Dave Boland is in there. I guess Antti Niemi in his own way for the first cup, but definitely Andrew Shaw deserves his due, and he got it yesterday, and it was nice to see because it's tough to see him walk away.
Yeah, I think this is sentimentality. I think that if I'm ranking the top 10 Blackhawks from that era, I'm not sure he makes it, frankly, and that's not an insult to him. I think he was great, but I think that there were a lot of guys that kind of fit into that category, and you would have to start thinking about the importance of the role on the team and how you got there and what you did when you were there. I'm not dismissing his contribution in any way, but I mean, you know, I mean, you think about it. My God, just go through your top seven. It is, you know, Hall of Fame potential for, yep, for a lot of these guys. So it's a definite step down, and then you'd say, it does he hang on to a 10th spot? I really loved the guy's career, and I think that we all did in Chicago, but I don't know that I would include him ahead of, you know, Dave Boland, or there are other guys that had like kind of great contributions that were not as I don't know, limited. I think it's really hard. I mean, Brandon Saad's ahead of him in my book, right? I think it's close, but I think
it's close. I think it's Sauter, close.
He had a huge moment. I mean, Q's ahead of him.
Ask Q to rank Saad or Shaw.
It's not a popularity contest and who you liked and didn't like. It's who made the contribution and when. And you know, Sauter was sort of a mini version of Marian Hossa. He was a two-way player who had tons of skill. You know, Hossa is as good a player as the Blackhawks have ever had, and they didn't start winning until they brought him in, frankly. So he would have a very pronounced role. We know Toews and Kane and what they've done. We know Duncan Keith and Seabrook. I mean, you know, you're already at seven before you start ranking where somebody fits in.
It's the last three.
There's also goalie issues that you'd have to ask, right? Because Crow is in, Antti Niemi's in. What about Scott Darling? And I just wanted to say Darling to you. I think it's a tough one, and I don't think there's an obvious answer. But I think that right now we feel like he's in because he just had to kind of hang up the old skates. But, you know, to me, he had an unbelievable career because he got the most out of it. He got every ounce out of that career that he possibly could. And I'm delighted that he's healthy enough to make a sensible conclusion to it, because frankly, when the last time he was out, I think we knew that was really going to be the end of it. But God bless him. It's great that he, you know, frankly, David, I didn't think that he was ever coming back. So I'm not stunned by it, but I think it's just, you know, you look at his age and the injury and all the rest of it, and you combine it and you feel sentimental about it. I wonder how we'll feel with a little more time and a little more removed. All right, that's the Pick Six. We got Biggs time next. We're going to talk some NFL draft and the Chicago Bears, and we'll ask him, are they going to wind up with a quarterback and when? Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw.
Biggs time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. He is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, longtime contributor to the station and a dear, dear friend. And he's brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, we're inching ever closer. Ryan Pace announcing the pick today, which is surprising. But there you go. He's having his Zoom at 9 a.m. We'll hear a lot of dodging of questions, I suppose. Are they going to wind up with a quarterback at some point in the draft, Brad? What's your gut tell you? Can they move up in this draft? Probably not. Second round, where are they at?
Yeah, they've got to come out of the draft with a quarterback because the depth chart right now starts with Andy Dalton and ends with Nick Foles, and there's nobody in between. So they've got to get a guy. I think they will try to make something happen in round one. Whether they can pull that off or not remains to be seen. How much competition there is between other teams that may be interested in trying to move up for a quarterback, that remains to be seen. It might not be a mad rush of teams trying to move into the top 10 for a quarterback. There could be multiple clubs involved. So we've got to see what happens. It's going to be really interesting to see what the 49ers do, guys. They spoke yesterday, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, and they didn't tip their hand as to which direction they're going at the quarterback position. They said that there were five that they liked when they made the trade from 12 to get to 3. Presumably, there only needs to be 3 that they like, right? You figure the one that goes number 1 to Jacksonville, the one that goes number 2 to the Jets, and then the one that the 49ers would select. And it seems a little implausible to me that this close to the draft, they'd still be figuring out exactly what they want to do with the third pick. But it's going to be really where the draft begins, I think. Do they take Mac Jones or do they go with Trey Lance? If they go with Trey Lance, Mac Jones could potentially move his way out of the top 10. I don't think there's a scenario that's likely in which Trey Lance doesn't go in the top 10. So that's going to be really interesting to me. And then do the Falcons stay put and take Kyle Pitts at number 4? Or do they say, hey, we're just starting this thing over. We'll take as much draft capital as we get and maybe make a trade down.
Brad, how much, if at all, will Ryan Pace be influenced or affected by his past mistakes at drafting or selecting quarterbacks or the pressure to get this pick right?
Well, I think he's got to be influenced by his depth chart, right? I think he's got to be influenced by, you know, this isn't some sneaky need that they have. They've got to do something here. And, you know, hopefully he's got different people involved with more valid opinions than he had the last time when he, as Pace seemed to say, everyone in the room had Mitch as the guy, right? Hopefully there's some more dissenting views. I think those are a positive when you're going through a process like this, especially a process that they've had months to work through this, right? And we all know that Matt Nagy wasn't around when they drafted Mitch Trubisky. So hopefully they've got more people involved. They've got a sharper focus, and then hopefully the right guy gets to them, okay? Because I think a best-case scenario is the Bears have the 4th pick of quarterbacks here, right? That's the best-case scenario, and so they're going to be certainly relying a little bit on the teams ahead of them picking the wrong guy. You know, how often do you have a draft? This isn't 1983, right? Where everybody's a star, and everybody wasn't a star in 1983. There were some poor picks made at the quarterback position anyway before Dan Marino. So they got to hope some people get it wrong, and they got to hope that they nail it and get the right guy.
You would think that if they wanted a quarterback, they'd have to be able to get up in the top 10. And I don't know how I don't know how you do that. I don't know, you know, now you're trading future picks. Now you're – I just think it's a complicated process. You need teams to not move up ahead of you too. I mean, it'll be when everyone's on the clock and you're coming down. We know that there's a possibility New England could move up. We know Denver could sit still and take someone. We don't even know, is it possible Carolina could? So, it's very difficult to figure out where you're going.
Yeah, they've got to have a whole stack of contingency plans and a plan for staying put at, what do we do if we can't get up? Then which direction do we go? When are we potentially going to be able to get a quarterback? What needs can we fill? What players do we like? Where they're picking at 20, that's the challenging thing. Not only for them, where do you get your impact player there, but how do you sell another team on trading down to that spot if they are looking to move up? If they are actively making phone calls, hey, we'd like to get up into the top 10. Well, who wants to go to 20? That's not the part in this draft. That's not where you want to be, and that's where they're going to have to entice teams with other draft picks, potentially future first-round picks. And some people have talked about next year's draft, 2022, being better. And I asked a national scout the other day about that. I said, hey, what are your thoughts on this? And he says, well, I don't know that the players are going to be any better. He said, I couldn't tell you that right now. He said, what we'll have or what we should have is better information. We should have an entire college season to go off, hopefully, right? Right. Cross your fingers, knock on wood. We should have something that more closely resembles a normal scouting process throughout the whole year. We won't be dealing with players that have opted out, so they'll feel like they're more secure in their information anyway a year from now.
And a combine with medical information graphics that they don't have right now.
Yeah.
The medicals are a problem right now. Good stuff, Brad.
Great stuff, Brad. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day, guys.
You too.
That's our guy, Brad Biggs, from the Chicago Tribune, their fine football man. That is an excellent point, David, and one worth addressing, because teams are still operating a little bit in the dark. And I wonder if that will be reflected in quarterback mistakes at the top of the draft.
It's Let's talk about that next. About. Yeah.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.